Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
I'm Ken Rudin.
And this has been quite a week, hasn't it, Ken? Hillary Clinton gave her concession speech. The big search for vice presidents began in earnest in both parties, and we've already thrown out the first Veep vetter. Tell us what a Veep vetter is, Ken.
A Veep vetter is the brother of the senator from Louisiana.
Exactly.
David Vitter's brother is Veep vetter.
And what a Veep vetter does is he vets Veeps. And should we vet a Veep in the Democratic Party first or the Republican Party first?
I think,
Ken, why don't you lead off?
We should start with Vanna White, who could vet the Veep better than David Vitter could. Well, I think on the Democratic side, there's one woman who clearly has been on everybody's list, and that is Madeleine Albright.
That's the one. I've been thinking about Madeleine almost nonstop since the Iowa caucuses.
But why can't she be
Which was the last time she was on the stage with Hillary Clinton. That's the other one, Hillary Clinton. We should talk about her.
And before we go on, why can't Madeleine Albright be on this list?
Because she was not born in the United
States. That is correct.
A problem that has afflicted others, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mel Martinez.
Right.
Otherwise, you know those guys.
Mao Zedong. At the 1972 Democratic Convention, when they were nominating people for a vice president, and it got into the wee hours of the morning, they were nominating people like Mao Zedong and Fidel Castro.
That is true. All those names were actually suggested by waggish delegates who had been on the floor too long.
Okay, but for reality, back to
planet journalism.
So Hillary Clinton obviously tops the list. She has pluses and minuses.
Yes.
And the minuses' name is?
Bill.
Exactly.
Not the fellow he was back when he was president of the United States in some respects, but maybe very much the fellow he was back then in other respects. And it's pretty hard to tell which way that would cut.
Yes, and I think it's fair to say that until perhaps South Carolina, he was still the most popular Democrat in the country, the most respected Democrat in the country. I think his legacy is perhaps not, if not forever tarred, certainly tarred for the rest of 2008.
I really don't like predictions, but I'm going to predict something right now. I think Bill Clinton will make a comeback in the affections of the Democratic Party in fairly short order by putting on a classy act at the convention in Denver and then campaigning his heart out for Barack Obama in the fall. We'll see. I may be wrong, but I think he will do those things.
That's true, but I suspect that you're going to have a very major speech at the convention for Hillary Clinton. So I'm not sure if you want two for the price of one, as he likes to say. But anyway, so assuming it's not Hillary Clinton, there are women on the list. There's Kathleen Sebelius, the governor of Kansas. There's Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri. There's Janet Napolitano,
governor of Arizona,
who has a good sense of humor.
What about some of these governors who aren't women but who are governors of large states and have been Hillary Clinton supporters and might add a lot to the ticket?
Of course, one of the conventional reasons you pick a vice president is to help you win a big state. I don't think there's been anything conventional about 2008, certainly nothing conventional about Barack Obama. And yet, so you see the names like Ted Strickland, although he has done a Sherman-esque,
well, it's actually, will not serve.
It's a Sherman and Peabody statement.
Yes, I would not serve if elected.
Or not do cartoons. Mm-hmm. And Ed Rendell also
said, disclaimer of interest. Yeah. And I think if people thought he had wanted to be on the ticket, he might have run himself.
I think the reason we like Ed Rendell is because he speaks his mind and you never know what he's going to say. And I think that's the reason probably a Democrat would not want him on the ticket.
Okay, so there's been question raised about Barack Obama's judgment in this whole process because of the person who was chosen to lead the search for a vice presidential candidate, James Johnson.
The guy who vetted Geraldine Ferraro for Walter Mondale in 1984.
And Miss John Sicaro.
Completely.
Her husband
completely.
And all of his problems in New York construction business
right.
And things that would
Real
be
estate.
Questionable associations.
Right. He also vetted John Edwards for John Kerry, which was not a difficult thing since they were both running for president. And Jim Johnson was that establishment type that Barack Obama perhaps needed. Barack Obama being the outsider, being only in the Senate for only 3 years, you think that Jim Johnson was the establishment liaison to the rest of the Democratic establishment.
You know, most people have never heard of Jim Johnson, and that's kind of the way he likes it, but he was well known
in Washington. He was the CEO at Fannie Mae.
That's right, and he was the head of the Brookings Institution, head of the Kennedy Center. So it was a signal that Barack Obama was saying, look, I'm running against Washington, but I also want to deal with you guys, and I want to hear what you think. And by bringing Jim Johnson on board, he thought he was going to establish that connection. Well, it blew up on him.
The problem, exactly, is that Jim Johnson, he had some favorable loans with
Countrywide Mortgage,
a mortgage
Anthony
company
Mazzillo.
That was part of part of the bankruptcy.
Big part of it, right. Biggest part of it, perhaps, this whole subprime crisis.
But he also got tremendous amounts of compensation on various boards that he was served on. And this is exactly what Barack Obama was against, and as a matter of fact, offered, I think, some kind of a bill in Congress to
limit
these kind of compensation awards.
But obviously that's not what Obama was looking at. What he was looking at were these connections that he thought he needed into the establishment in Washington, even as he rails against it on the campaign trail, which, of course, brings up the big H word, hypocrisy. And as you know, this has been leveled at John McCain as well,
right,
because while railing against the lobbyists of K Street throughout his rise as a presidential candidate
Charlie
in 2000,
Black and
2008,
company, right?
Who does he turn to, yeah, to run his campaign but Charlie Black and Rick Davis, two of the biggest, best-known K Street lobbyists there have ever been.
So they'll still be vetting. Kent Conrad said the list is about 30. There's some senators we should mention. I think Jim Webb of Virginia has been mentioned quite often. Defense
a little
law.
Too much of a loose cannon?
He may be a loose cannon. I think he
a
is.
A little too much of a hot temper?
And I think he's...
Carries a gun around with him, even in airports.
But if you're redrawing the map towards 270 electoral votes, Virginia is certainly in play, 20% Black population, two successive governors in Virginia.
Two successive Democratic,
Democratic governors
in,
yes,
Virginia. And
right,
then Webb taking away one of the two seats
and
held
Mark
by Republicans.
Warner is almost
Senate.
A slam dunk to pick up the other Senate seat in November. So.
Big Democratic year in Virginia.
I think so.
Maybe even big enough for Barack Obama if he put a Virginian on the ticket, so that's a good argument.
The question is whether Barack Obama takes a loyalist or he reaches out to the Hillary camp with an Evan Bayh or somebody like that who is working with Hillary. One interesting choice, I think, is also Bill Richardson. Bill Richardson obviously was clearly campaigning for vice president. I think when he thought that Hillary was the front runner.
And he was with Hillary.
Exactly. Well, not with her, but during
but
the debates.
He implied very strongly that he was kind of acting as her second in some of those debates. And then, of course, the famous watching of the Super Bowl with Bill Clinton that we all interpreted as a sign that he was going to endorse Hillary. In fact, there were some people who thought that that had already occurred when those two men sat down to watch that game.
Well, poor Bill Clinton had to sit through this very boring Super Bowl. By the way, the greatest
that
Super Bowl
That was an
in
incredible
history.
Super Bowl,
Thank
let's
you.
Face it. That was a great Super Bowl.
Yes.
But not a great endorsement because it turned out that Bill Richardson had not endorsed Hillary, and he turned around later on and endorsed Obama, and that, of course, was what occasioned the famous comparison of him to Judas Iscariot
by
James
Carville. So in other words, Bill Richardson could incite the wrath, perhaps, of some Hillary Clinton supporters. But again, he's Hispanic. He's the West. New Mexico is one of those swing states that obviously Obama is looking at in the West, like Colorado, like Montana. They have not often gone Democratic in presidential races, but they have the capability of doing so.
And that would really be an alternative to picking up a Florida or picking up an Ohio to get the Democratic candidate over the threshold that John Kerry was stuck at.
I think we all agree that had Al Gore picked a Floridian in 2000 instead of Joe Lieberman, perhaps he would be president today, finishing his two terms. But I think the Democrats are not looking at the South anymore for a running mate, which eliminates Bill Nelson, which eliminates Lester Maddox, which eliminates John Edwards. I think he'll look either the Midwest or the Rocky Mountain West.
If John Edwards had gotten John Kerry North Carolina in 2004, he'd have a real case to make to be on the ticket in 2008. But it didn't work out that way, and I don't think he's really in the mix. Well, what about John McCain, though? Let's talk about the possibilities
I don't think
you don't think he'll offer it to John McCain?
I don't think Obama
no,
would pick
he won't
McCain,
pick John McCain.
Although Kerry offered it to McCain.
I do understand that.
Al Gore? No way, right? Al Gore?
Don't see it.
Chuck Hagel?
No. That Chuck Hagel, apart from the Iraq War, in which he was quite apostate in the Republican Party, he was 90-95% of the time voting with George W.
Very
Bush
conservative.
Throughout his entire 8 years.
Right.
And that's just unacceptable to the rest of a Democratic Party that thinks that it can win with real Democrats.
That's another argument against Bob Casey, even though Bob Casey was a strong Obama supporter in the state of Pennsylvania.
This is a junior senator from Pennsylvania.
But I've been, again, a very strong pro-life force in the Democratic Party. I don't think the Democratic establishment, whatever establishment there is, would go for a pro-life candidate.
I think that's correct. But if we shift over now to the Republican side and say, what about John McCain? Who is he going to choose? A lot of people think that if he could find a woman to put on his ticket, right now, with the feelings on the part of many Hillary Clinton supporters, that would be a 10-strike for him.
You do know that, obviously, the Republicans are looking carefully at how to woo either the women's vote or the disaffected women's vote in the wake of the split between Obama and Clinton supporters, which I suspect will not be as much of a split in November as it is now, but certainly is something that the Republicans feel they can reach out to. And there's a name that you keep talking about as a potential female running mate for McCain.
Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin is the 44-year-old governor of Alaska, and of course no one outside of Alaska has ever heard of her, but she's enormously popular there. She is a former mayor of a small town there in Alaska, and she leaped up to the governorship without serving any time in the state legislature.
Beating the governor, Frank Murkowski, in the primary.
That is correct. Beating her own party's governor, Frank Murkowski, in the primary. As we said, she's only 44 years old. She first made her name in the state as a basketball player. She was the state champion back in high school. And I'm not being entirely facetious here. People are really talking about what a popular figure she is, how mediagenic she is, how she would transform people's idea of McCain overnight, because she is so much more youthful and so much more presentable and just takes the Republican Party in a whole new direction.
And with Barack Obama being born in Hawaii and Sarah Palin from Alaska, I think it's about time those two places became states.
It is much more future-oriented, though, to look to somebody who is not already a household name, somebody who is a woman, the first woman who would ever have been on a Republican ticket, and that makes more sense than going to somebody like, say, Elizabeth Dole, who's actually a month older than John McCain, or to Kay Bailey Hutchison, who, while she represents Texas and is enormously popular there, is not a particularly impressive performer on stage or on television, and probably would not give John McCain the bridge to women that he's looking for.
Well, actually, when I led you into this question, I didn't think you'd say Sarah Palin. I thought you would talk about the woman from Hewlett-Packard.
Carly Fiorina is a fascinating possibility here. While people have seen her in the corporate role as Hewlett-Packard chairman, they're only beginning to realize when they see her on television now that she's speaking not about business, but about politics, that she's supporting John McCain, and she's really become...
And effectively.
She does much better than any of the politicians.
Including John McCain.
And when you see people talking about a Mitt Romney vice presidential candidacy, I just can't see those two guys getting along well enough to even hold each other's hand on stage in St. Paul in September. Carly Fiorina is the sort of Republican who makes Republicans feel good about being Republicans again.
You know, we always talk about how the vice presidential decision is overrated, and we've gone over tons and tons of instances where it is overrated. But in a year where Barack Obama only has 3 years of experience, he has a thin resume, he's African-American, and John McCain would be the oldest president in history. So obviously, their running mates do matter. Would either candidate pick somebody who's never served in public office, like a Fiorina or a Wesley Clark or something like that?
The big problem for McCain in terms of this is that while he wants to balance his own age and experience, if he goes too young or too inexperienced, and I would apply this, for example, to Bobby Jindal, the Louisiana governor a lot of people are talking about. He's a brilliant young man. He has done extraordinary work in Louisiana, and he's really working hard to clean up the ethical situation in Louisiana.
Lots of luck.
Yeah. Augean task. But had Bobby Jindal just maybe 4 or 5 more years, it would be better, because he is literally half the age
of John McCain. That's amazing. You see the two of them together, 50%. That's really, like, you know.
It's nuts. And it also takes away one of the main attack lines that John McCain has against Barack Obama, which, as you said, is age and experience. He can say, look, this guy's got a thin resume. He's not really ready to be president and have all this responsibility. But this 36-year-old guy who's just burst on the scene and whom you've never heard of, he'd be just fine to be a heartbeat away.
You know, I was talking to, may I drop a famous name?
Yes, you may.
I know this name will knock your socks off. Vin Weber, huh?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Well, you're just playing the Vin Weber card.
No, Vin Weber, I was talking to him on Talk of the Nation, because I've been saying all along, Rob Portman, the former congressman from Cincinnati, the former trade representative, he would be, I think, a very good choice. But Vin Weber said, you know something, he's too close to Bush.
And, very close to Bush. Rob Portman is one of the most qualified, sensible,
smart,
intelligent, experienced people you could possibly ever want in any office, but he has no sex appeal. He is not a charismatic performer at all.
Well, he does give McCain what McCain sorely lacks, and that's economic know-how and gravitas. But, as Vin Weber said, that almost every economic decision that the Bush administration came through, Rob Portman signed off on. And I think that would be an inviting target.
And advocated
for. Yes,
yes. No, I mean, he didn't just sign off.
Right.
He wasn't just around for it. He really believed in all those policies. And whether they were good policies or bad, they're unpopular right now.
And Tim Pawlenty, I mean, speaking of Minnesota, Pawlenty's been on the list for a long time. He's an early advocate for John McCain in a very potential swing state. No, you're shaking your head now.
I don't think he even brings you Minnesota.
Yeah.
He's not overwhelmingly popular
in
Minnesota.
Right.
And if he doesn't bring you his home state, there's really no purpose of putting somebody on the ticket if you don't think they're going to at least give you their home state.
But I'm thinking that it may not be a geographical thing. I mean, we always talk about the classic case of Bill Clinton picking Al Gore. It was not a geographic decision. It was certainly not balancing anything. They were, the two of them were peas in a pod. But I think they worked together. They had tremendous chemistry. And I think that's why they were so effective. So ultimately, I don't think it will be geographical. I think it will be somebody who has some kind of connection or a companionship. I don't think that John McCain will ever look at Mitt Romney in the way that as a kind of simpatico figure, a close, you know, working relationship type.
See, I think the idea behind a Romney choice would be to cement his support on the right, to make the core conservatives come back to him. Karl Rove and some other people who have gone to work for McCain since he became the nominee, presumptive. Those folks think that that's his big problem, to get the base enthusiastic about him. My feeling is if he has to get his base excited about him by throwing them the VP pick, he's done for. He needs to be able to count on his core because they don't want to vote for Barack Obama, and he needs to reach out to people who are not already committed activists. He needs to reach out for people who are more in the middle of the electorate.
Well, does that rule out people like Joe Lieberman or Olympia Snow or things like that? Those names have come up.
They've come up, and they would be fine. And they would make sense. They really would. In fact, I think either of those two people would do him great good in that terms of outreach, but he's got some restrictions, and one of them is whoever he chooses has to be pro-life. And both those two senators are very pro-choice.
Right. You know, you think of all these great opportunities for John McCain, but there really isn't a natural fit, whereas you can envision a lot of easier pickings on the Democratic side. I think it's a tougher call on the Republican side.
I think if either one of these people winds up picking a vice president who is broadly popular and seen as a great choice, that'll be a surprise. I think it'll be much easier, much more likely, let's say, that either one of them will pick someone who is not a hugely popular choice and that there'll be more complaints than applause. That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, can I just suggest that the listener read our columns on Watching Washington and Political Junkie this week to find out everything you need to know about the vice presidential choices.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. Give me up on my side, 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 give me up on my side. Looking so fresh as my neck, as my neck, my princess and these girls on my side.